The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I want to talk today about the idea of progress in our practice. We certainly live in a progress-oriented world here in our society. The West loves progress. We like to think in terms of things getting better, and so we're kind of upset when it seems like they're getting worse. And it's been interesting to me to learn that this idea of seeing history as progress, if you will, or anything really, is peculiar a bit to Western culture, and also is fairly recent, this idea. And that if you look worldwide over time, a more popular view of history and its unfolding is that it is cyclic, and things go up and down. I read an interesting book by an Indian fellow, South Asian, who discovers the Buddha. You know, he knew that the Buddha had arisen in his country, but he didn't know anything about it because he was raised as a Brahmin. And he writes kind of a memoir about his journey to understand who the Buddha was. And he also has some Western connections. He eventually ended up as a journalist in London, so he has a sort of an interesting multicultural perspective. And there was a point in the book where he was just shocked to discover that Westerners uncritically see history as going from worse to better. You know, it's like that's their view, and he was amazed. Oh, it was a new idea for him. So this is from his book, An End to Suffering. The Western idea of history can be so seductive, with its promise of adding an extra emotional and spiritual dimension and validation of our limited life, with its ability to brighten the future and the past. I thought that I needed only the right historical information to see both forwards and backwards in time. But there are places on which history has worked for too long, and neither the future nor the past can be seen clearly in their ruins or emptiness. You know, this is when he was looking at some old Buddhist sites. They have somewhat more historical places than we do here in California, in India. So that's not meant to be actually a depressing pronouncement. I wanted actually to point maybe toward, are there places in your mind or your life that might be places like that where it's not really possible to reconcile it all of it into kind of a neat story of progress? I don't know that our lives can be really made into that. And yet, the Buddha teaches that liberation is possible, you know, that we can go from a mind that is confused and agitated and suffering to a mind that is clear and free. So he does actually say there's progress in some sense. So how can we understand this and track it? You know, what is progress in practice, and how would you know? And how often should you check to see whether it's happening? So this is an idea that comes to practitioners at some point. And the Dalai Lama suggests that we should evaluate our practice every 10 years. He thinks that's a reasonable interval, is that you would look once every 10 years. I've heard other teachers say different numbers, but none really much shorter than 5 years as a reasonable guideline for our practice. And we can't really evaluate it either in totally exact measures like you have, say, on your annual review at work. You know, it just doesn't really, you don't get these check boxes like that. And I've also found, just in my own practice, that rarely do our stated goals come about exactly as we state them. They may come about, but if we look back over 5 or 10 years, they came about in a different way, maybe, than we thought. And yet, you know, something is happening. Does anybody think something is not happening in your practice? Even if you've only practiced for the last 2 hours this morning, something has happened. That's too soon to evaluate, by the way. But, you know, something is happening. And so I thought what I would try to do is offer some dimensions of our practice that do tend to show progress. And, you know, after all, we are supposed to be moving toward less and less suffering. And so that means there should be more and more of what is not suffering, I hope. So there's a nice list put together by Shinzen Young, another teacher, which he calls five dimensions of happiness that come about in our practice. And we could also see them as clues toward whether our practice is progressing. So I'll go through those five. So the first is reducing suffering. So it seems clear enough, but, you know, we know what suffering feels like to us. It's, you know, the sense of dissatisfaction, the sense that we're not living in attunement with our values, the sense of being oppressed by our life in some way. Whatever it is that we define as our suffering, that should be reducing over a period of 5 to 10 years. And then it gets more subtle over time, of course. And then the second one is the flip side of that, which is elevating fulfillment. So as our suffering, however we're calling that for ourselves, gets reduced, we should have also some elevation of what is meaningful to us or what feels nourishing to us or what feels fulfilling in our life. Again, on a scale of 5 to 10 years, we can look back and say, you know, yeah, it's true. I'm really spending more of my time on things that I think are important or things that I know are cultivating good qualities, something. We should feel like our life is moving in that direction. And we can probably see that. Even if we don't live a life where we have a huge amount of choice to design our lives, you know, if you're married and have young children, that's what you're doing. But still, within that, there's a way to elevate our fulfillment through the activities of what we're doing in our life as it's unfolding. The third one is interesting. It's understanding yourself at all levels. This is, by the way, a dimension of happiness, but I'm using it as a dimension of progress. And I think the understanding at all levels is significant because we start out by maybe we realize we're somewhat disconnected from our body or we're disconnected from our values or we don't. Some people come to this practice in, you know, some distance into their life and they realize that they don't know who they are exactly because they've just been doing what other people told them they ought to do. I should have gotten a university education and then I got a job and then I got married and then I got the house and the dog. But it's, you know, then they realize that that might not be exactly who they are. And so there's that at the beginning. But then there's more about, you know, what is the work I'm supposed to be doing? Or maybe I shouldn't be working. Maybe that's not for me. And then we look even more deeply. The practice, as we go inward, starts to ask us to look at what is this activity of deciding that I know who I am or that I think I am one particular thing? What is the activity of creating a self and defining it and defending it? And can I understand how that process is coming about in me? We don't need to stop doing that immediately or decide it's wrong or try to make an ideal one. It's really about the knowledge and the understanding of seeing how it is that we self. And what that is. Is it my body? Is it my political opinions? That's who I am. Is it my emotions? Or maybe it's none of those things. And how is that changing as we all get older after 10 years? So over time, we have a better understanding of that. And therefore, of course, how to reduce the suffering associated with that. And then the fourth dimension is positive behavior change. I like this one because it's very concrete. You know, there's understanding things and there's reducing the gross suffering in our life and so forth. But then there's, can we actually do it? Can we really manifest what we're understanding? And we begin maybe by, at a basic level, we stop interrupting people so much. We stop, if we have addictions, we may get those under control. You know, these kind of definite behavior change things that are external. And then we have internal behavior change too. We stop denigrating ourselves. We stop walking through the world thinking that we're less than everybody else, or that we're stupid, or that we're never going to get it right, or that we blew our chance earlier and now we just have to play it out. You know, these attitudes that we have can also be changed for the better. And it gets more and more subtle as we go through. But we're really asked to do something with the sitting all this time we're putting in on the cushion. We're asked to do something with that. And then the fifth is manifesting a spirit of love and service, which I like a lot. And it comes last, I think, because when we've done those other four, we're really in a position then to do that manifestation. Of course, we do all five at once. Please manifest love and service as soon as you can. But we, you know, somehow the reduction of suffering, the elevation of fulfillment, the understanding ourselves, and the knowing that we can change our behavior, all of that are the conditions for really being able to take our practice beyond ourself, beyond our own self-improvement, self-understanding, improvement of our position in life, that somehow we realize that there's something bigger than that that we could be working toward, and that we need this preparation, in a sense, to do that well. I know that many of us, maybe if we have a helping way of being, we may discover sometime in our practice that we've been helping in ways that weren't as helpful as they could have been. And one thing that practice does also is kind of align that a little bit better. And we learn how to really give in ways that are going to serve this world and other people. So reducing suffering, elevating fulfillment, understanding yourself at all levels, positive behavior change, and manifesting a spirit of love and service, these are markers that over the 5 to 10 year time frame we see changing, and then another 5 to 10 years, and another one. There's not only one cycle of this. And there are also dimensions that increase our happiness. But they may not increase our happiness in ways that are so conventional. You know, if we've pursued a conventional career and family life, many people come to practice because that turned out not to be the most satisfying for them. These are things that are really internal developments, cultivations of the heart, expansions of the mind and the heart, so that we discover a different kind of happiness, one that's not the more conventional one offered to us. And they may not actually have anything to do with conventional markers of progress in our society, such as money, power, fame, position, these kinds of things. Practice may bring those things about for you, or it may not. It may not be anything about that. So be careful what you expect from a meditation practice. It might be that you're not getting some of those conventional things because you're getting something much better. Or those conventional things may come, I don't know. But I think it's important to know that, is that the practice might or might not improve our lives in a conventional sense, but it will definitely improve it in a way that is actually very meaningful. So if you're caught up in standard Western ideas of progress, because I just talked a lot about how we can see progress in our practice, I don't know, I would suggest relaxing them. This view is not needed to nonetheless develop the heart. And, you know, maybe an idea of progress or, you know, attainment of goals is actually hindering our practice at some point. And it might be better to look at these five markers that were identified as markers of happiness and see if those are what's coming about after 5 or 10 years of practice. So may your practice progress toward true and real happiness. Thank you.